Scoff and Quaff Show with Jules Serkin on Channel Radio.
Good morning, listener. A warm welcome from a lovely, a very warm Romney Marsh in Kent, with quite a lot of rain. Driving in this morning in my open-toe shoes. I haven't got one of those Flintstone cars, you know, where your feet are out the bottom. So actually Dr. John was driving in because he's back, you know, from Wales, listener. Did you have one of those Welsh bath cakes?
Yes, I did. They look rather like, they're like scones, but squashed.
Okay, did you sit on them?
No, I didn't sit on them, Jules. I leave those sort of things for you to do, but I usually use a rolling pin.
And was it nice?
It was lovely, actually, yes.
And you were at Merthyr Tydfil?
Yeah, Merthyr Tydfil.
I always think it's a lady's name.
No, it's one of the old mining towns, and sadly, because of the mining industry is in such decline, and has been for some time, the town itself is really quite run down, which is rather sad.
It is sad, and, you know, do we blame Margaret Thatcher, or maybe
yeah,
we need
I suppose
another
we
show?
Do. Well, it's a combination of the industry and the economic climate, and what's economical and what isn't with the coal industry, and it's just very sad, that's all. But a lovely part of the world, I guess, and beautiful weather as well.
And how are the people?
The people are very friendly, actually. Despite the sort of obvious decline in the area, we had a lovely time. We toured all around. I went to a distillery called the Penderyn Distillery, which is the only Welsh whiskey in the made. It's absolutely delicious. It really is. I'm not a huge whiskey lover myself, but I really did take to it. And we also scoffed.
Rumour has it that you did take to it.
We also scoffed and quaffed around the place and had some lovely food. Welsh lamb, of course. And it was great.
Was it a bargain?
It was a bargain, yes.
And are prices cheaper up in Wales?
They are a little bit. The fuel is certainly cheaper. But obviously the things you buy in supermarkets, they're slightly cheaper, but not huge difference from where we are. But it was noticeably cheaper in terms of accommodation and the restaurant.
And you were saying, Dr. John, that the local shops were struggling and that they've got lots of big supermarkets.
Yeah, well, they've got the big
town.
Retail parks out of town, which are flooded with people, and the shops have all but disappeared, mainly. I mean, they're mainly the sort of charity shops and things, and the pubs are very, very active and busy. But the small traders, there are a few, but not as many as there obviously were, and a lot of the shops are boarded up, which is sad.
That is sad, and also for the young kids coming out of schools and colleges, it must be very, very tough. Yeah. Well, it's lovely to have you back, Dr.
Thank
John,
you.
In the hot seat. And Dr. John will be reading out all your tweets. So if you do have events, you can tweet us at ScoffQuaff. We want to know when and where and what you're doing. Then in the studio, first of all, on the blower, we have Colin on wine about 10 minutes past 11, if I don't ramble on too long. And he will be telling us more on his monthly update about Spanish wine, and I know he recommended a lovely one to Chris Pollard at Chris Connect It on the Twitter, and Chris has been quaffing it. In fact, I had some. It's very, very nice red wine. So Colin on wine, that's Colin Harkness over there in Maraira on the Costa Blanca. Maraira is near Alicante, Valencia region, and a really nice region near, maybe you'd know, Javier or Denier, all those kind of places, and about an hour from Benidorm. So Colin on Wine, our Spanish wine expert, will be on. Follow him on Twitter, at Colin on Wine. And then we have been scoffing some lovely Godmersham game. I've already had, listener, a tranche of lovely, beautifully cooked venison. So we've got Phil Miles. Hello, Phil. Good morning.
Very good morning to you.
And Dr. John's just having a piece.
Delicious.
And you've cooked this very simply.
Yes, it's just simply seasoned into a pan, very hot pan. Get it pretty much how you want it done. A knob of butter just to baste over, let it stand, then eat it.
Well, thank you for mentioning the knob word already on the show. But it is absolutely beautiful and it's so tender.
Yeah, it's fortunate because when you're taking the animal right the way through from when it's been shot, we're allowing it to hang till we know the meat's ready. Mm. Then we butcher it and it produces these wonderful, beautiful steaks.
It is. It's absolutely gorgeous. And, of course, it's a lean meat.
Yes, very lean. It's very low in cholesterol. We get chaps that have had major heart surgery, and this is probably one of the only few red meats that they're allowed to eat because it's so low in cholesterol.
Very interesting that, yeah. So Phil Myers is going to be updating us on the game season and what's going on in the at Godmersham Game and in the game world, really, in the UK and Kent, of course. And he's based just outside Canterbury in Myerstall. And then next to him, we have our resident author, Bruce McMichael, who was on in July when I was rolling about on a beach somewhere in Spain, in Moraya, actually. And so Bruce McMichael has come in. He was on with Steve Wood, and he's come in to tell us about his next book. But you can follow him on the Twitter at CookRapSell. Good morning, Bruce.
Morning, Jules. Good to see you.
It is. The last time we were frolicking at Squarey's, weren't we?
Yes, having some delicious new wine. Yes. New bubbly.
English sparkling.
Yep, very nice.
And we had a lovely teas, which was your prize, wasn't it? You won it on SCOFF.
That's right, yes. Very lucky to win the prize from the radio station.
Yes.
Squarey's is such a beautiful place. The location is perfect, just near West Durham, Sevenoaks. And the other people who were there, the tea people I've been to see actually since the show down in Tunbridge Wells.
Mm.
And no, I really enjoyed the day. Thank you.
It was a good do, wasn't it? And we had the other lady that won, Dr. John. Are you focusing on
yes,
this?
I am indeed.
It was a cat lady. What was her name? Everything But Cats, or her Twitter was 9 out of 10 cats, or
something.
We'll think about it. But she was also lovely. And, of course, we had all the guys there, Perk and Pearl.
That's right.
And we had, who was the photographer that was sitting with us and pouring the tea? Anyway, it'll all come back to me. You know, there's too much going on. I want to just play a song and eat some venison. So we're going to first, Twitter has suddenly gone bananas. A big hello on Jules Serkin. JulesSerkin from Slim Sam's Cakery, my lovely friend Sammy Patel, who makes these gorgeous slim cakes. So they are all the taste, but not as much fat, and they're great. She's just given me some lovely pictures, and they do a new apple one as well, which it sounds lovely. And Dr. John, what's happening on our Twitter, may I ask?
Well, we've had tweets from the Fat Carrot, our famous carrot that comes in the studio every now and again, who isn't
not
fat, sort of
tubby,
course.
No.
She's got a supper club coming on the 20th of September, Love Cheese Night, at £28, with a 20% going to Spade Works, and there'll be four courses. So if you're interested in that, then get in contact with at the Fat Carrot 11, which is a Twitter handle. We've also had Kent Farmers on, and Seed and Bean, who are providing some chocolate, which I hasten to add, listeners, Jules has scoffed half of it over the weekend. She didn't give any of our guests or myself an opportunity to sample some of their award-winning chocolate, because one of the ones that she scoffed avidly.
Oh, it was so nice.
Was the extra dark sea salt, which is a great taste award winner this year.
I beg to differ. I actually scoffed. Well,
first two
of all,
bars, listeners. Two bars, Hazen. And the big, you know, the big giant bars, not small ones.
I first of all had the rich milk chocolate, which was delicious. But my downfall was not the dark chocolate. It was the rich milk chocolate. So not the award winning, but I give it an award. It was the Cornish sea salt and lime. That one, Dr. John.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't the dark.
It wasn't the award-winning. I haven't had the award-winning one.
Oh, thank goodness you didn't notice that. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a chance to
maybe
sample this award.
But you see, let me just say that Charlotte Davy, who sent it in very kindly from Seed and Bean, her one mistake was to send it to me before a bank holiday weekend.
Little does she know how much you scoff things, and as soon as it comes through the post or through the door or however it comes.
I'm urging you, listener, if you can track down Cornish sea salt and lime, it really, I mean, I just couldn't stop eating it. I started off with one square and then it went downhill. But we will be sampling today, Bruce and Phil and Dr. John and maybe myself. Might get a look in. We'll be trying the organic Just Ginger from Seed and Bean, and we'll be trying the coconut and raspberry and the Cornish sea salt. And also, of course, that's going to go down very well with the venison, won't it, Phil?
Indeed.
Yeah?
Yes.
Anyone else, Dr. John?
Yes, we've had At Beck's Food Kitchen tweeted in. We've also had Alamo Restaurant, which is in Whitstable in Kent.
Ah, lovely Moroccan.
And we've also had At Richard Biggs, who's an owner of Camino, which is a bar and bar Pepito and Copper de Carver, the first dedicated sherry and carver bars in the UK.
Oh, that sounds very nice. And as you know,
they're based in London.
Well, carver is my one weakness.
Yes, one of your 856 weaknesses, I seem to remember now, Jules.
I'd like to say a big hello to Nurse Liz Gilson, who's on the Twitter, and she moved, and I didn't think she was going to have any Wi-Fi, but she seems to have managed, so hello to you.
Yes, she's a regular tweeter, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
From the States, I seem to remember.
And I also have to announce, Dr. John, while you're away, we actually found our winner for the Nature's Path wheelbarrow. And so it's at Clara Wallander, that's K-L-A-R-A, Wallander, W-A-L-L-A-N-D-E-R. And she's won this whole wheelbarrow full of Nature's Path cereals, which are all gluten-free and gorgeous. So congratulations. I should have a little trumpet, but I haven't got one. Congratulations, Clara. And Nature's Path will be sending you this wheelbarrow. And I know that she works in the garden, in a mental health hospital or home. I'm not quite sure. I will find out. So I'm going to see if I can get some pictures of her with a wheelbarrow in doing her gardening and eating some Nature's Path. Congratulations. We love a winner. So we've got Bruce, who won a competition, and we've got lovely Clara. Also, who else have we got?
We've had At Love Chilies, which is, of course, our friend Steve Wood. Saying that we got to listen to Scoff Quaff, of course, because it's all about local food, local chat, and local radio.
And local venison.
And we also, yes, and local venison now. And local books. Hopefully we're going to be talking with Bruce about some local Kent food, aren't we, Bruce?
We are later, yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is that Bruce McMichael, his third book, because he's just reeling them out now, he's into the swing, aren't you, Bruce?
I am, yes.
And this is one for you listeners to get involved in. He's looking for old Kentish recipes and ideas and food that used to be, perhaps, for this new book. Bruce will be telling us more about that later on, but do tweet in if you have ideas, because I was thinking about we had Potash Farm cob nuts. Of course, that would be a very Kentish thing, and of course Phil will no doubt muscle in on some of these as well. Muscle venison. Oh dear,
you're really on form today, aren't you, Julie?
Well, so we're going to play two little ads, and then we're going to... Oh, who's our sponsor, Dr. John? How lax. Is it Advanced Buns, or it must be?
It's actually Kentish Cob Nuts, one of them, and also Shorter Food and Retail Snacking, which are the people that were on... that were going to come on last week, but unfortunately couldn't at the last minute. They ride all the snacks that we've been eating.
Well, that's the Fru snacks and also Nothing But, which were delicious.
They were delicious. They really were nice.
It is Potash Farm. It's not Kentish Cob Nuts, darling, on
Twitter. But it's Potash Farm on Twitter, but it's Kentish Cob Nut Company was their business. And
somebody snaffled that, haven't they? They've snaffled that...
the Kentish Cob Nuts, yes, yeah, unfortunately. It's obviously someone that's in the business from what
we need to wrestle it off them.
Well, you can do the wrestling. You've got broad shoulders.
But a big hello to Advance Bundle. They're your label experts in Kent. That's Advance, B-U-N-Z-L, Bunzel. Now, I'm bear with me, listener, because I've got new technology that
I'm playing
with.
And she's hopeless with technology, particularly after all the carver she's been drinking.
I know, and the venison's gone straight to my head.
Yes,
two little ads, listener, and then we'll do it.
Jobsinkent.com. Temp Network have hundreds of vacancies across West Kent. We offer ongoing work, weekly pay, and a variety of shift patterns to suit your needs. Visit us at www.tempnetwork.co.uk or call Tunbridge Wells 531-777.
Now let's work it to the bone, bone, bone. Come on, work.
I still dream.
Kate Bush. That is Kate Bush with her fabulous Cloud Busting, and of course she is in concert tonight for the first time for many years. I can't remember. I think it's, is it 20? Is it 20 or 30 years?
I think it's nearer 30 years.
Yeah, amazing. And I wish I had tickets, and they sold out in about 3 minutes. And I just wish the Daily Mail would shut up rambling on about how old she is and how she might not be able to prance about in a leotard. It's just ridiculous. She's just so talented, and as Bruce and I were just saying in the studio, we watched a documentary on her. Just, I'd forgotten just how talented. I mean, she's really like Beethoven, isn't she?
She has a beautiful use of music and atmosphere and dance as well. It's a wonderful theatrical package.
And if you think that her first song, she was about 16.
Yes, I think she wrote it when she was 14.
Yeah. I mean, so she's really a genius. Young. She was a child genius and is now a genius. Talking of geniuses, no doubt sipping something on his lovely balcony, we have the fabulous Colin Hartness. Colin on wine, good morning.
Good morning. I'm not sure if I can follow Kate Bush, oh good heavens. What an introduction you gave her.
Are you in a leotard?
No, not exactly. It wouldn't be a pretty sight, being perfectly honest.
Well, first of all, congratulations, Colin, on wine, Colin Harkness, on your lovely wedding.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
How did it all go?
Oh, perfectly. Of course, we had plenty of cava and plenty of white and red wine, rosé cava as well. So, yeah, excellent. But, I mean, I don't suppose that is the most important part of a marriage, but I thought I'd mention it.
Well, one wants to know what someone who's a wine expert would have at their wedding to drink.
Ah, well, rather difficult, but obviously it depends on the size of your pocket. But I have some very good friends who make still wines, and Bodegas Castaño from Dio Yecla, and they gave me a very good price for their red and white wines. And I also had both white Brut and Rosado Brut from my good friends at Dominio de la Vega, which is one of those bodegas which makes cava, but outside of the Catalonia area, so quite interesting from that point of view as well. And they're very, very well received by all our guests, which is obviously very important.
And what did you have for the toast? Did you have a different one for the toast? Or did you have the same thing throughout?
Well, actually, yes, we did in a way. We actually had a dessert wine from Bodegas Castaño. But this is very unusual and it's absolutely wonderful. It's a red dessert wine, which is quite rare, but in actual fact quite prevalent in this particular area. It's made with Monastery grape variety, and it's been left on the vines for much longer than would normally be the case. So it's harvested round about November. During that time, the sun has had a real good go at the grapes, and so they actually look like raisins because so much of the water content, the juice content as well, the water content has evaporated. So you're left with sort of a very, very rich juice, which comes from the pressing, and had a little bit of touch in oak there as well. Absolutely gorgeous. So we did a toast in that.
That sounds delicious. And following on from that, my dear friend Chris Pollard, which is on the Twitter at Chris Connect It, you recommended him a red wine, which I quaffed at his lovely wife's birthday. That's on the Twitter at the Josie Maguire. Miriam McGurk. So tell me about that red wine before you go on to your stint.
Well, to be honest, although I had the tweet actually from our friend, was it Philip? I can't remember.
It's Chris Pollard.
I knew you had a P in there somewhere.
Yes.
I think we all need that.
Two L's.
Anyway.
Well, particularly as we get older, it becomes more desperate.
But moving on, John.
Swiftly.
Well, that was a red wine from Priorat, and I won't go on about that particular wine because it's just gone out of my mind, but certainly I can tell you a little bit about Priorat. Priorat is a wonderful winemaking area. It's sort of just south of Barcelona area, inland from Tarragona. And here they make Spain's equal most expensive wine, which sells for around about 900 to 1,000 euros per bottle. And that's retail, not in a restaurant. Mm. And it's equal with another one from Rivel de Duero. So anyway, it gives you an idea about the quality that comes from that area.
I just like the way you roll your R's.
All right.
Was that ours or was it another word?
The rat was worrying. But Liz Gilson, who's listening in the USA, is asking if you could later on perhaps put a little list or a link that she could find a list of your recommendations of Spanish wine. But of course, she'd need to be able to get it in the USA. So there's some homework for you, Colin.
Yes, absolutely. Perhaps you could ask your friend if she wanted to send me a tweet. My details will be on your show,
yes,
sure. Or an email. Then I'll get on to about that and give her some recommendations.
Brilliant.
Because there is actually very good business in the USA for Spanish wine producers. I mean, one of the ones I've just mentioned, for example, Bodegas Castaño, they're quite prevalent in the USA as well.
Well, that's
so
excellent.
I'm sure I'll be able to help.
You'll see that on the Twitter. She's already tweeted.
Right.
So tell us about what's happening in wineland in Madeira.
Well, we're actually scheduled to be talking today about Spanish white wines. And obviously these are available not just here, but what I'd like to do is talk really about Spanish white wines which are likely to be available in the UK as well. Of course, most of your listeners,
yes,
are in the UK, I'm sure, although obviously when you're online they're all over the world, I'm sure.
Yes.
But there has been, as I put in one of my tweets, a very interesting and fascinating for me rise of Spanish whites in Spain. And it's been actually quite remarkable because when I first came to Spain in 1973, in fact, really you had to be a bit careful. If you had a house wine in a restaurant and it was white, if you knocked a little bit onto the table, you'd almost expect it to burn through the wood of the table. we were talking seriously acidic and essentially undrinkable, I'm afraid to say. I returned a number of times during the 70s, but early 80s, I found that things were getting better. There'd been a sort of a beneficial change in attitude, and because of that, the quality of the wines had started to improve as well. And then in the 90s, it saw a real rapid improvement through to this day, when I can say now, in my belief, that Spanish wines can compete on the world wine stage alongside some of the best in the world, because there are some fantastic examples of wines. How did it all happen? Well,
how did it all happen, Colin?
Yes, that's a good question. You should have asked it just a second before.
Well, I was tweeting, listening and tweeting at the same time.
That's interesting that you spend your time tweeting to others. Okay, fair enough.
No, because I have to, you see. Multitasking.
And then when she's not tweeting, she's eating.
Yes, how did it all happen? Well, it happened basically, and the Spanish have been very good about this because they have admitted something that was actually happening in France but wasn't admitted in France for many, many years. In Spain, they employed, and I mean employed, the use of what was known as flying winemakers. People interested in wine in the UK will have perhaps heard of this phenomenon in round about the 1990s, where there were experts, a lot of the time from the New World, as we call it, so California, Australia, New Zealand, who would actually be flown over to really update either the chateau or the wineries, or in this case in Spain, the bodegas, in terms of their techniques. And the first thing they did was they cleaned everything up. I mean, being perfectly honest, in those 70s days and before that, so many of the Spanish bodegas were actually dirty places, and sometimes you would even find that there would be animals in the same area where the wines were being made, and all that had to stop.
What kind of animals?
Well, pigs, etc., whatever animals are kept on the various farms. If the weather was bad, they would bring them in, and this would be the same place where the wines are perhaps being fermented at that time, or maybe being aged, etc. And so, I mean, that was just an example, but essentially they had to make it far, far cleaner than they actually did. And so, you know, that's what first started happening. The reason for that, I think, was because winemakers started to realise, and they were quicker than the French to realise this, in fact, that there was a whole new market occurring in the world regarding wine. And wine, of course, was an export, but it wasn't doing that well. And so they decided that they could bring some more money into a country which desperately needed it, and still does, I'm afraid, by exports. And so they realised they had to really sort of up the ante. As you know, of course, there are so many radio and TV programmes in the UK in the 1990s. For example, there was Food and Drink. Obviously, we know what that was about, and that was on BBC, with the lovely Gilly and the great Oz. And, of course, up to this modern day where there's the famous Scoff Quaff on Channel Radio.
Yes.
I thought they'd get a plug in there. But send a tweet on that one, if you like. Yeah. And so because of that, they realised that there were more and more people being interested in wine, and not just red wine. Yes, Spain, of course, is well known for its ability to produce some wonderful red wines. And then they started then to realise that not we can use white wines not just as a cash cow to bring in some money for turnover extra so we can make our lovely reds, but we can also actually improve the quality of them as well for the world wine market, and therefore add even more cash to the cash flow. So that's what they started doing, and you'll find that the wines have gone up in absolute leaps and bounds. Look, for example, am I going on too much here, Jules?
No, I'll tell you, just 1 minute while you pause for breath.
Okay,
Colin, I'm just opening some seed and bean while you're chatting to me. Can you hear?
I hasten to add, this is about the fourth bar that she's eaten over the weekend. Two of them we never even saw.
It's award-winning, you know, Great Taste Awards. And it's just about, we have an exclusive, Colin, it's just about to be sold in Waitrose.
Oh, wow, that's good. That's good business.
But I'm just going to have, while you just round up on your wine, because we've got, as you know, two more guests. We'll have you on again. But I'm just going to have a little bite. And make you feel a bit jealous. Ready?
Yes.
Oh, it's lovely, Colin. It's absolutely lovely, Colin. I'll pass some to Bruce and some to Phil.
I'm shocked, listeners, because she's actually passing it round. She normally scoffs a lot herself.
Colin, it's absolutely divine.
Empty wrappers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the ginger, dark chocolate ginger. Now, if you like that, or if not, boys, open that. Are you salivating, Colin?
Well, do you know what? That is a perfect-ish link there, because one of the wines I was going to tell you about has an element of ginger on the nose. It's a wine which is made by a good friend of mine, Harry Hunt, and it is available through Moreno Wines of London, but they distribute all over England. This wine is called Tres Pueblos, three towns, three villages, really. And this wine is actually made from Macabeo, and it's made from Viognier. It's a blend of the two grape varieties, wonderful grape varieties, one Spanish and the other one technically a French one. Mm. It's made really from vineyards which are about 1,000 metres above sea level.
Colin, I'm just eating chocolate.
Yeah, don't worry. The great advantage of that is that it means that there's wonderful ripeness, because of course they get the Spanish sunshine, but there's also a big change in temperature between daytime temperature and nighttime temperature. Indeed, one of their wines, is it's a red wine, is actually called 20 degrees, 20 grados. And this is because that's the difference between night and daytime temperatures. Tres Pueblos, wonderful, it has that ginger aroma to it as well. But I've got a map of all the areas that where they produce wine in Spain in front of me now.
And I might just have a slice of venison while you're while you're telling me about the map. But can I interrupt and say that lovely Bruce McMichael, who's our resident author, while I have my little tranche of venison there, wants to ask you a question.
Please do.
Hi, Colin. Yes, Bruce here from Cook Wrap Cell. It's
hello,
great.
Bruce.
Hi there. Great listening to you.
And the venison is delicious, Colin.
I'm sitting about 2 feet from Phil's venison, and I was just wondering, normally you'd associate this sort of red meat with red wine. I just wondered if there was a good Spanish white wine that you would recommend to go with this particular meat.
Well, being honest, obviously I haven't got it in front of me now, and no. I'd like to do a tasting. I'd love to do a tasting, in actual fact, to get a few suggestions around there. But generally speaking, if you're going to look at a white wine to go with game like that,
yes.
I suppose you could call it game venison.
Yes.
If you're going to get a white wine there, you really need something which has got a powerful grape variety and also some oak aging and perhaps fermented in oak as well. It wouldn't be, I don't think, an ideal match to go with white wine, but it's Spanish white wine. But if you're looking for some white wine to go with it, I would look for that sort of style. So maybe a Chardonnay, or maybe, and this is something...
I'm just having a bit more of the ginger dark chocolate. Carry on, Colin.
You can't keep her down, that's the trouble.
It's delicious.
There's a great variety here which is called Charello, which some people, like myself, in fact, are calling the new Chardonnay, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an area inland from Tarragona where it's making wine, Penedès, where it's making wine from this Charello, and some of them are oak-aged. I think that might have just about enough body to stand up to that, but what I would really like is a Priorat wine, which we were just discussing before,
yes.
Priorat. For the red wine to go with the venison. Anyway, I don't know if that was any
thank
use
you,
to you
thank you. Now I have to boot you off now because I'm going to play some Gilbert O'Sullivan for you.
Very nice too.
But you will come back. You will come back next month and tell us more, won't you, Colin?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, pleasure. Good luck, everybody in the studio.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
And that was the lovely Colin Harkness and his Gilbert O'Sullivan.
I promised myself to treat myself and visit a nearby tower, and climbing to the top will throw myself off in an effort to make clear to ever what it's like when you're shattered, left standing in the lurch at a church where people are saying, my God, that's tough, she stood him up, no point in us remaining, we may as well go on. I did on my own, alone again, naturally. To think that only yesterday I was cheerful, bright and gay, looking forward to wouldn't do the role I was about to play. But as if to knock me down, reality came around, and without so much as a mere touch, cut me into little pieces, leaving me to doubt. Talk about God in his mercy, if he really does exist, why did he desert me in my hour of need? I truly am indeed alone again, naturally. It seems to me that there are more hearts broken in the world that can't be mended, left unattended. What do we do? What do we do? Mm-hmm. back over the years, whatever else there's or there's. I remember I cried when my father died, never wishing to hide the tears. And at 65 years old, my mother, God rest her soul, couldn't understand why the only man she had ever loved had been taken, leaving her to start with a heart so badly broken. Despite encouragement from me, no words were ever spoken. When she passed away, I cried and cried all day, alone again. Naturally, alone again. Naturally.
Oh, that was the fabulous Gilbert O'Sullivan. Let's hear more of him. Well, we've had Kate Bush, and then Gilbert O'Sullivan, just storytellers, aren't they? Storytellers. And we have now the fabulous Phil Mars. As you've heard, listener, we've been tucking in to the Godmersham game. Beautiful, beautiful, tender, juicy venison. Runs off the tongue. It's done in a lovely buttery sauce. And while Phil tells us about what's going on in the game world in Kent, I'm going to have, boys, this is the coconut and raspberry seed and bean award-winning chocolate. You can hear I'm snapping it. I'm just going to smell it. Oh, it's lovely. And I'll pass it round while Phil tells us, Phil, what's going on? I'll just chomp.
Okay, you are going to save me some of that chocolate.
Oh, well, I don't know. It's absolutely lovely. You're getting a real... Oh. You're getting a real raspberry hit there straight away. Mm-hmm. Bruce is tucking in.
Delicious.
Yes. Okay,
Bruce,
well.
What do you think? And there's a little crunch in there.
There is, yes. It's just perfect because they're both delicate flavours, coconut and raspberry, and chocolate is. So they're just working really nicely together.
Coconut is my one weakness.
Only one.
We're on about 900 now.
Well, yes, that's what I heard. Well, I didn't want to believe the rumour, of course.
I've got chocolate all over the microphone.
okay, the game season.
Tell
what's happening?
Just let me eat. Carry on.
Okay, well, here in Kent, so obviously the big one everyone really knows about, although it's not a Kentish product, is the glorious 12th with the game season.
Do you find Wales. I say mmm a lot during your interview?
Well, that's fine, yes, because that indicates, folks, that she's eating.
Mm.
So we've got the grouse, which is obviously northern England and Scotland, but they're available. What a lot of people don't realise, of course, is also the poor man's grouse, which is the common snipe. Comes in the season on the 12th as well, so you could actually hunt those down here.
So is that the one with the long beak?
That's it, little very small game bird, yeah, found here on the marshes. Venison wise, obviously we've got the fallow and the roe locally, which is in season producing wonderful venison, as you chaps have already tried today.
I had a tranche or two. Yeah.
Pigeons, rabbits, hares, it's all starting to come into season now.
How many hares are left in England?
They tend to be, where they are, there tends to be quite a few. Then you can go into another valley and you won't see any. But the numbers are still they're holding quite strong.
Okay. And how would you know the difference? Because of the bigger ears?
I suppose that's one way of looking at it. It's a slightly bigger animal than a rabbit, and it tends to be on its own, and it moves slightly differently. So, yes, okay. you can distinguish it from a bunny. Yeah.
Long legs?
Yes.
Longer legs?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a bit of a runner, really.
No,
don't start that again.
Sorry, folks, private joke.
My friend Serenity Becker had a runner once. Bit tough.
Bit tough, yes.
Tell me about your branching over to London, a little bird.
Yeah,
we've
always done a few London markets, and they've been very successful. And we've been invited into a number of others now. Both north, south, probably not so much into West London, but certainly we do Alexander Palace and the Oval and Wanstead and places like that. And we started doing one called Herne Hill in South London.
I know that, yeah.
Which allows us to cook as well, so we can actually have our barbecue there as well as the up and ready game, which is proving very successful.
And what are you doing in Kent?
Okay, well, we still do one or two local markets. Mainly, our main one now is Whitstable, which is my hometown. But we are attending the other major events, such as ploughing matches, the Canterbury Food Festival, Broadstairs Food Festival.
Canterbury Food Festival's huge now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is.
I just eat my way around.
Great. We've done the county show, and we do a number of smaller shows. We did a charity do a cricket match for a charity thing. So we do the large and the small venues, but lockdown in Kent, it's going very well, and we're really quite pleased with it.
Now, how are you finding venison and game? Is it getting more popular, or are people sort of discovering it? Because it used to be sort of, was it a sort of a thing that you'd have if you were posh?
Well, the answer to your first question is yes, it is getting more popular. I think when I was on here last time, we spoke about it again. Mm. And each year there tends to be a little bit more requirement. People are asking more and more for the game. I think at one time it was probably seen as a posh food.
Mm.
But where people now are more concerned about what they're eating, the food miles, the environmental impact, and local businesses, the game ticks all the boxes because it's a local product, it's healthy eating, it's produced locally, it provides money back into the local economy. So it ticks all the boxes, it really does.
And you do now little dinner parties, I hear.
Yes, we do the odd little dinner party. These, you know, a few people just want to get together and have some good wholesome cooking and try and get some local products together. We can do that. We've also branched into doing some salami. We made some venison salami, and we're looking to do some wild boar salami.
Wild boar. Now, I know you won't divulge where there's a wild boar. I've got one in the studio, actually. I'm on with him at 1 p.m. It's Paul Andrews on the Business Bunker at 1 p.m. And you can tune in for all your Kent business news. But there are still wild boar.
Yeah, I mean, where we are, they're what's called classified as feral wild boar. They're not a pure wild boar in the sense it's 100%, but they're certainly a feral wild boar, and they do eat differently to your normal piggy.
So then the flavour would come out in the meat of what they've been eating, and
to a point, but they are a little bit gamier because there is that geno of the boar in there.
Because
this is the problem, when we go back to 87, when we had the hurricane,
yeah,
there was no wild boar in the UK full stop, living extinct, something like 300 years. The hurricane came through, trees down, fences down, pigs out. So you went from extinction to a viable population in a blinking of an eye.
So really, the wild boar is just an escaped domestic pig that goes feral?
No. There was some... The wild boar were being farmed. They were pure
okay, I'm
wild
with you.
Boar. So the escapees were wild boar.
I'm with you. Okay. They came out in their little prison suits.
Well, indeed, yes, with the stripes on.
Yeah. Bit like that film with... who is it? The Great Escape, where they do it with Steve McQueen, isn't it?
Steve McQueen, yeah.
A bit like that.
Yeah. Because the other problem is, this is where we get the feral pig from, is the male boar will mate with any sow that it comes across.
Mm.
And this is why the breeders don't like them. So you can have your best Gloucester Old Spot or Essex White.
Mm.
And out come stripy piglets.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So if people want to, for example, have you for the dinner party, do you actually rock up yourself?
Yeah, we turn up and we'll put something together. We're not talking massive dinner parties, you know, 6 to 8 people.
Yeah.
If they just want some local food, it's about, it's not a pitcher on a plate, it's about good flavours, cooked simply, so just to show them that we can produce wonderful stuff here.
Now, can I give your mobile out or not?
Yeah, if you like.
You don't mind?
No, not at all.
So you could call Phil Miles on 0787 0656 967, and he's, as I said, he's Pennypot Lane, Canterbury, and you can also find him on Godmersham Game, that's Godmersham Game, at yahoo.co.uk. Now, I'm just going to bring Bruce in here, because I see you two working together, because Bruce McMichael, listener, is an author who's on the Twitter at CookRapSell. So you're looking for old Kentish recipes, old Kentish things. Tell us about that and see how you and Phil will synergize.
Thanks, Jill. Yes,
I made that word up.
Yes, I wasn't going to say. yes, I'm working on a book.
Have some chocolate.
Yes, I would like, if you could hang on to some, I wouldn't mind a little bit. I'm working on a book that brings together the old Kentish recipes with the new products that we see around today. And venison, obviously, is a very key part of
this. I'm just tucking into some now.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
So you can imagine, that, Jules, going with maybe some cherry sauce or some cob nut sauce.
Mm.
I was talking to Phil earlier, and he says it's the kind of meat that you could match with almost anything.
But so juicy and tender. Absolutely gorgeous.
And it's been sitting here for 20 minutes or so, and it's really kind of relaxing
resting.
Now and resting. And it's
a bit like Dr. John, really.
So the idea is to bring together all different parts of the old Kentish food. So I'm looking at things like Canterbury pudding. We've talked about Canterbury a little, and that's a fantastic old-fashioned recipe that maybe could be made, well, could be made with new, fresher or fresh ingredients, but also might inspire somebody to create a small baking business from home.
What is Canterbury pudding?
Well, there's lots of different versions for it.
And is it a sweet or a savoury?
It's a sweet pudding. And okay. Mostly, I mean, if I read it out, it doesn't sound great, but the ingredients together, you've got breadcrumbs, pastry on the top, some brandy, milk and lemon juice.
That does sound rich.
But it's the kind of thing you can adapt and create. And the thing about food such as this, there's a history and there's a story about it, and so many people are interested in the heritage and the provenance of ingredients and food. And I think people in Kent could really get together with these sort of ingredients. Ginger cobnut cake, for example, Folkestone pudding pie, that's another sweet one, again.
Great names.
Made of lemon.
Well, maybe we could feature one a month, Dr. John. One of these Kentish recipes would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yes, that would be a great idea.
And going back to Phil, and talking about your Kentish sort of dishes, I was talking to Phil about, I'm quite into seared pigeon breasts, only because I've discovered it and really like it, and because it's quick, a bit like your venison, you can just, you know, rustle it up quickly in the evening. And you were telling me the best way to do a chicken, to do a pigeon breast. Can you just fill in, listener, about doing a pigeon breast?
Yes, I think that the simple answer is you either do it very quickly or very slowly. As you already mentioned, the searing can be quite good. What I do with that on demonstrations, sear the breast, take it out, slice it, make some sort of sauce. It could be a bit of the spiced damson and a little bit of alcohol. Put the pigeon back in, just sear it, and then serve it pink. Mm. But you've tried that anyway.
That was delicious. Yeah. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And then your other way was a slow
cook.
Yeah,
just basically a good-fashioned stew.
Okay.
I just put in a casserole, slow cook the thing. But what you can do, because if you think about it, the pigeon's got a slight liver flavour to it.
It's strong, isn't it? Yeah.
So if you actually mince that up, you can actually make like a false meat liver pate out of it.
You see, John likes a mince.
Yeah.
Don't
but
you,
if
Dr.
you turn
John.
It into that, people would think it was a liver pate, when in actual fact it's just pigeon breast.
That would be superb. And then you can have it with a beautiful red wine. And then pigeon pie.
Yeah, that's an old recipe, pigeon pie.
Going back to Brucey, you see, for his book,
sure.
Kentish pigeon pie. Mm. So would that be casseroled first and then you'd add the pastries?
Yeah, some people, it's like, there's another one, it goes back to the old suet puddings as well.
I love a suet pudding.
We got one for chicken because if you go way back to like medieval times, the chicken's job was to produce eggs.
Yeah.
And they kept those chickens going for as long as possible because they wanted the eggs.
Pass the chocolate, Bruce.
So when they did get bumped off, they would have been around for a little while. So you had some real old boilers.
Do you find that Phil makes you hungry? Who's an old boiler?
Well, yes, I've come across one or two, but I can't actually mention it on here. But that's an exact example. So you've now got a chicken's come to the end of its useful life of producing eggs.
Yeah.
So you've now got to try and utilise the flesh. And that's a slow cook. And then you would take that, put that into another basin with suet and do it like a suet.
I do love a suet. When you serve it, Bruce, and then you take off that cloth, you always burn your fingers when you take the cloth off, but there's nothing like it, is there?
Fantastic piece of theatre for the table.
Yeah. Well, there's a pub in Whitstable called the Royal Naval Reserve in the High Street, Phil.
Yes, I've been drinking
there. Be careful what you say.
I'm just going to say, you almost let it out of the bag then.
Keep in mind, it is my hometown.
Yeah. So we should all meet up there, I think, Bruce.
Sounds and, like a great Christmas party idea.
Yeah. So, Phil, did we read out your website? I don't think we did.
No, because I haven't got one.
Okay, so I've given all the details, and of course you can get through to Phil about this beautiful fresh game on the number I gave you, and it will be up on the website afterwards, which is www.scoffquaff.co.uk. Bruce, back to you. While I eat the chocolate and tuck into the venison, how can we get hold of your book?
Well, the first book, Cook, Wrap, Sell, which is a guide to sort of starting and running a small business, particularly from your home or from a small unit. If you go to, there's a couple of websites, Bright Word Publishing, those are my publishers, or Enterprise Nation, and they're connected with the publishing company, and Amazon as well, Cook, Wrap, Sell. The prices vary, obviously. I think you can buy it for between £5 and £10, but Amazon has a
we want
choice.
The £5 one.
And it's available as an ebook as well.
I mean, it's priceless, really, for guys that are starting. A lot of our listeners that are starting small business startups.
Yes, yes.
It's definitely the Cook Wrap Set is right up there for them.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. I've read several pack sections of it, and it really
Thank
is
you.
Very informative.
And the Cook Wrap export then is presumably about getting it over to France or Germany or wherever.
That's right. It's a sort of logical move on from Cook Wrap Sell, which is aimed at the British market. Because if you're looking at markets like Russia and the Middle East, Dubai, they're crying out for
expat stuff.
Yes,
love
it.
Marmalade is huge in Saudi Arabia.
Who would thought? Yeah, who would have think that?
Only me, because I read it.
But there's lots of Russians and sort of the local people who want our products as well. And China is booming, obviously. And if they see a product with a Union Jack on, they pick it up because it adds a sort of cachet to their larder if they open it up and there's a product with a Union Jack on. So, and the government, the British government, have been very supportive of exporting food in particular. And there's a lot of help on the websites. But I just thought a book would be quite good because it's very handy to have when you're sitting in your office and you just need a quick reference to how to set up an export business, how to find a buyer or markets in foreign markets.
And have you, I must put you in touch with Start My Biz. Have you discovered them?
No, that sounds interesting.
On the Twitter, at Start My Biz, and I know them very well. It's Natalia Sukram, who was at my wedding. That's how well I know her.
Great.
But she will put you in touch. It's a Canterbury City Council grant thing to help young startups, not young, I mean new startups. And then, but most exciting, listener, start sending in your old, ye old Kentish recipes, ideas, foods, and if you can, be really clever and try and get some of Phil Miles' game and perhaps make some puddings. We are happy to taste them on the Scoff and Croft show.
Let's qualify that. Jules is more than happy to taste them. Whether we will get a chance to taste them is another matter.
So ring Phil Miles on 0787 065 6967, or tweet him at Godmish and Game and ask for some venison or some pigeon breast, and then pop it in a pie and pop it on in Bruce's book, which will be fab.
That's right, they could send recipes or ideas or suggestions to my Twitter. That's probably the best way.
Which is at Cook Wrap Cell, W-R-A-P Cell, Cook Wrap Cell. And it's I happen to have discovered the publisher's Twitter, which is at E-Nation. Am I correct? I think I am.
Yes, E-Nation. It might be underscore.
Oh, yes, might be. It's my writing.
E_nation.
And Bruce is in Tunbridge Wells. So, but Phil, going back to what you said, I didn't know you were a Whitstable lad.
Oh, yeah. Our family go back 5 generations.
Okay. Because I'm still a DFL, you know.
Yes, I know that. I know. I didn't want to mention it.
No, 20 years.
Doesn't count.
And my son, who was born in Whitstable, is still a DFL.
Yeah. No, my great-grandfather, we go back, Seasalters are our home.
Okay.
So my great-grandfather lived in the pink cottage that was down Seasalter Lane. It was demolished many, many years ago.
And would you be hunting for game around on the marshes there?
Well, come September, the duck and geese and snipe and stuff. Yeah.
And maybe we could go out with you and I could put Dr. John in the firing range. excellent. Right, Bruce, you tuck into some chocolate and
we're going over to
the lovely Dr. John just for a quick snaffle up of what's happening.
Yeah, well, we've had
in Twitter
we've had Chef G Oliver from the East Kent College, that's Gareth Oliver's, tweeted in, so welcome Gareth.
We love a chef. Well,
yeah, well, you love lots of chefs.
Yes, I do. I'd like to be married to one if my new husband's listening. Bloody hopeless in the kitchen at the moment. He's got post-concussion syndrome. Oh, I've been looking after him for 3 weeks now, Dr. John. I could do with one of Phil's venison pies or something.
Talking of pies, we haven't actually had, like, the Kentish pieman hasn't been in today.
He thinks you're still lolling about in Wales.
I know, it's my mistake.
He came last week.
I know, but I forgot to tell him I wasn't here,
he's
didn't
he's probably
I?
In a huff now.
No, well, I'll have to get back on to him. So he'll have delivers to, his pies. He'll have... I do miss his nice pies.
Yeah, I can tell. Not. Looks like you've been tucking into far too many bath cakes.
Well, that's a popcorn and a kettle black with all the chocolate that was consumed over the weekend.
May I ask the million-dollar question? Let's see how well he's researched. How much chocolate has he been eating? Actually, you're very good on chocolate because you're diabetic. You are very good. Who is on the show next week, Dr. John?
Well, our sponsors will be
Elm. You'll never guess.
Elm Court, and we have Darren. From Star Valley Game that's coming on for Elm Court.
So it's game season.
Yeah, well, they've just started shooting, haven't they?
Yeah.
You were saying, yeah.
Just don't get in the firing line, Dr. John.
No, well, I'm always in the firing line as far as you're concerned.
And who else?
And I'm not sure, if I haven't got anyone down, actually. I think
we've got
a slot.
Someone.
Yeah, but I think it's actually, I saw a tweet. Isn't it Beth's Megador.
Megador?
Yeah, isn't I thought she was saying she was coming on
maybe
next week.
Maybe a little Russian. Is she a little Russian? I'm never quite sure. I always think she seems Russian.
That or she's coming on Business Bunker, one
yeah.
or the other.
Oh no, definitely not.
Because she said she was going to bring some of her pigeon pie on or something.
Oh, well. Well, so, I think Business Bunker is an inferior show on at 1 p.m. So
yeah.
Not sure.
No, it's just I haven't caught up with my emails. I only got back yesterday, so
too busy drinking that Welsh whiskey.
Well, I only had a little tipple, but it is rather nice.
Final roundup on the Twitter.
Well, we've had Unit Works. We've had Baker John Kent, who's the guy that does the baking at Elm Court and some of the farmers markets. And we've also had the Love Local Cheese, which is the...
And we do.
Yes, that's also for the farmers markets. And Cafe Broadway UK. And also, I've had an interesting article that came on about sugar. Sugar-free diet alert, it was.
Yes.
For us diabetics. The UN warning sugar could be the new tobacco because of its risk... Low sugar, should I say. Could be the new tobacco because of its risks of health through obesity. You might think that diet that cuts it out would actually help, but the experts say it doesn't. It actually is not a good idea to cut out sugar completely from your diet. The trendy new free anti-aging plan to list fad diets...
This will be good for you, Dr. John.
Yes, thank you. Dismisses as a waste of time and money these potentially dangerous diets. So there you are. So you see, I am right. You see, I did always say to my other half and to you, I can eat sugar, but just not in huge quantities.
In moderation.
It's like everything in life. It's moderation.
Well, listener, we hope that you've enjoyed us listening to us eating venison, beautifully cooked by Phil Mars of Godmersh and Game near Canterbury in Mystole. Check him out, and also the fabulous Colin O'Mwine, our resident expert. I know I had to stop him because he just knows so much. He'll be on again in another week. And then the fabulous, of course, Bruce McMichael, our resident author. And we'd like to say check out his, send in some Kentish recipes and check out his books. Cook Wrap Export being the latest, or Cook Wrap Sell on Twitter, follow him. And big thank you to Seed and Bean. We will be scoffing this after the show. And of course, well done and congratulations to our Nature's Path winner,